Welcome to A Public Affair on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Today, I will be speaking with prolific children's book author Tui T. Sutherland. Hello there.
Hi, Shannon. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for joining me today on KGNU. So the book I was sent to review is the latest in your Wings of Fire series. It's called The Flames of Hope. However, Wings of Fire is not the only series you've been contributing to. Walk us through some of your other projects for listeners.
Oh, sure. I've been really lucky to get to work on a bunch of different things. I also wrote a trilogy with my sister called the Menagerie Trilogy, which is about a boy who discovers sort of a secret zoo of mythical creatures in his small town. And then I also was one of the contributing authors to the Seekers series, which is a spinoff of the Warriors series. So Aaron Hunter is a pseudonym for a group of authors. So I got to write a few of those. And then I also got to work on the Spirit Animals series a while back, which was really fun too, because it was kind of like one of those games where someone like writes a sentence and then passes it on, someone writes the next sentence and then you pass it on. It felt like that, but with a series of books where like someone wrote book one and passed it to another author and they wrote book two, and I got to write book five in that series.
So for any adults out there who have not heard of the Wings of Fire series or the Spirit Animal series or any of those other series that you just mentioned, basically, you're like a rock star among kids.
Oh, thank you.
So what are your events like when you have events for kids?
Well, it's been, it was a really long time to not have some because of the pandemic and lockdown. But we actually just had my first like in-person event a couple months ago when book 15 came out. And the bookstore, this wonderful local bookstore named Belmont Books, they rented out a theater and filled it up with kids. And it was amazing. There were like 400 kids there, I think. And I love it so much because getting to like feel their energy, and they always have a million amazing questions. That's the best part, is that their questions can often be very specific to the characters and scenes that have happened in the books. And it makes me think like, what did I do there? Do I remember all the details? And also my really favorite thing is when they come and bring me their characters, their drawings, their fan fiction, because I really want Wings of Fire to feel like a world where there's a million stories going on, and I'm writing, you know, the stories that you see, the stories that are in the books, but there could be other stories of dragons saving the world in the background that I'm just not writing about, and I want kids to feel like they could write those stories and they could be part of this world too, and that their voices are just as important, and that their characters, like that they have the potential to save the world. I feel like that's a really important theme in the books, is that anyone is capable of saving the world. And so I really, I love meeting fans who get so passionate about the series and about the dragons, and who have all of their own like amazing creative ideas. They also have just this incredible art. There's so many wonderful little artists out there drawing their own dragons, and I wish I could draw, but I can't do that at all.
But the books, I mean, you have your books that are, you know, standard text, you know, like a regular young adult book, but you've also adapted many of these books into graphic novels. Tell me about that process.
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun. We love graphic novels in my house. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. And so we read everything. I'm lucky enough that they turned out to both be sort of voracious bookworms. And one of our favorite things is graphic novels. And so when Scholastic said to me, do you want to try turning Wings of Fire into graphic novels? I got really excited because I know they do them really well. They have so many great ones at Scholastic. And it's been awesome to kind of see, like, the way it works is we have one person who actually takes my novel and writes out like a script, sort of a graphic novel script, like what it would look like, where it's just like panel one, and then it looks like dialogue.
Yeah,
it's like
storyboard.
Yeah, exactly. and that's really helpful because, you know, when I first started this, I couldn't visualize quite exactly what it would look like. And he's actually an author himself. He writes the graphic novel series Hereville, which is fantastic. I really love those books. Barry is his name, and he has a really good visual sense of how to turn the books, like how to describe what they should look like. And then I go through that manuscript he's written, and I try to add all my words back in because I'm like, no, every line of dialogue is essential. And he's like, they won't all fit in the bubbles, Tui. You have a lot of words words in your books. And I'm like, I know. So that's really fun, is going through the manuscript at that stage. And then it goes to Mike Holmes, who is the artist. And he does this very detailed, like, first he does sketches, and then he does drawings, black and white drawings for the whole book. And then we have yet another person who comes in and does the colors, which is also really fun to see. Her name is Marta Laiho, and she's also a very talented artist. And so, you know, it's like a huge team of people, it feels like, to me, because normally I'm just writing the books by myself in my office. But then to have all these other incredibly talented people involved and, like, helping craft the books. So yeah, there's five of them out now. We did the first five in the series, and we're working on the sixth one, which is coming out in December, I think.
Now, when I got a copy of The Flames of Hope, which is number 15 in the series, I figured, I should go back and, you know, just see what's going on with these other books. And I like to read all of the books that, you know, whose authors I interview, but I have to admit that I was like, maybe I shouldn't really dig into this because there's 15 books and I don't know if I can handle that. And it was really helpful to have the graphic novel. And I didn't even know that the graphic novel existed as an option until I walked into a bookstore, the Boulder Bookstore, which is this lovely bookstore here in Boulder. And my kids just gravitated straight to Wings of Fire. I'm like, oh, hey, I have a copy of that, but not in a graphic format. Okay, so it was an interesting twist of fate that I should even discover these graphic novels thanks to my kids. And then I realized, well, maybe I can just go to the library and check out these graphic novels. It's not so easy. You have to place a hold. Your books, the graphic novels, are apparently very popular at the library. I had to reserve a copy so that I could get one on my own. And my husband actually works at the library, and he brought me the hold. And he said, these are really hard to, once they get on the shelf, they're gone. So you're right up there with Garfield and Diary of a Wimpy Kid and all of these, you know, most in rotation, very well loved books, or at least the graphic novels are. So just FYI on that.
It's nice to hear. Thank you.
Do you hear that from other librarians or bookstore employees?
Yeah. I guess I do. And it doesn't always feel real because most of my day is spent like alone in my office with my dogs or like with my kids who are not that impressed with me. I mean, they think I'm a great mom. They're more interested in my mom side than my author side. So it's always a bit of a like mental shift to be like, oh, right. That's right. There are people out there reading the books that I'm writing. I love hearing that. I love librarians. They're the best people in the world. So I really appreciate them keeping them in stock for those kids. I was going to say, like, no worries at all. I don't expect people to read all 15 books unless they're, you know, the kids who love them. I will say with book 15, you could jump in at book 11 because the books are organized in these 5-book arcs. So books 1 through 5 was one storyline that follows as one prophecy. And then books 6 through 10 were another one. And then 11 through 15 kind of dealt with a new continent of dragons and a whole new set of characters. But it's still helpful to read the whole thing because in book 14, they meet up with a bunch of the characters from the first 10 books. So you're completely forgiven. I would not have expected. I don't think anyone I've talked to recently has in these kinds of interviews has actually managed to read all 15 of them.
And I will admit that I think it's really, really helpful to have with the graphic novels to keep all the different dragons straight in my mind, right? So you can visually see who is who rather than being like, okay, is that the Mudwing or the Hive? I forget. So
that's one of the reasons that I named the dragons the way I did, because when I started off, I was doing this sort of fantasy trope of giving all the characters just kind of like weird mishmash of syllables names. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to get even more confusing really quickly because I love adding characters. And so I went back and tried to give them all names that relate to their tribes so that at least, you know, if you're listening to someone named Riptide, you could probably guess that that's a sea wing, one of the underwater dragons. But kids are amazing at keeping track of them, like almost better than I am, I would say. Sometimes they'll ask me a question at an event and I'll have to go through my brain and be like, who was that? And especially if I renamed them as I was writing the book, I'll have to be like, which character did I end up giving that name to? So it is a lot to keep track of. And I'm always really impressed with the kids who are super on top of that stuff.
So how many years have you dedicated to this series?
Well, this is actually, this year is the 10th anniversary of book one being published, but I started writing it 12 years ago. And I know that because I like wrote up sort of an outline of the first five books and I turned it in to my editor like 2 days before my son was born, and he's 12 now. And thank goodness he was 9 days late, or that might have delayed it a little bit further. But yeah, 12 years, which sounds crazy to me. And it's even crazier when I look at him because he's taller than me now. I'm like, how did that happen?
So how does being a parent, did that kind of help, grease the wheels of creative thinking for children's books?
Yeah, I think so. It's interesting because I feel like it sort of deepened the themes a lot that I was going for, because the first five books in particular are about these five little dragons who are told that they're in a prophecy that says they have to stop this giant war that's happening, and they're in charge of saving the world. And it's a lot of pressure. And the other thing is they've been stolen from their families by this movement that is intent on controlling them so that they can control the outcome of the prophecy and the war. And so the theme of those books is really about, like, who's in charge of your destiny? Like, is it you? Is it the universe? Is it, like, the grown-ups in your life? And about these five little dragons kind of coming to terms with their own, like, power and their own agency and making choices for themselves. And I feel like it also tied into, like, nature versus nurture, because I had this baby at the time as I was writing the first book, and I was thinking, like, first of all, am I going to mess him up? Like, what are the many ways that I could do this wrong? Like I think many parents feel. And so I wrote a lot of really terrible dragon parents as a sort of reassurance that at least hopefully I won't be that bad. So I was thinking about what do I want for him and how do I want him to, you know, turn out? Like, how much is it me and how much is he just going to be the way he is no matter what I do? Those are things that really interest me, and I don't have, like, concrete answers. The books are not about, like, answering that question. They're just about raising the questions and hopefully making the readers feel that they have control of their own destiny in a way. I think he's kind of perfect, and I don't feel like that was me. I feel like he just came perfect. So it's been, like, an interesting journey being a parent and watching him grow, like, as I'm writing these books, for sure.
Do you ever find that current events or complex social issues creep into your storytelling? And do you see that as an effective way to put these issues or these kind of complex structures into the consideration of children? Because a lot of times people think, oh, kids aren't ready to think about that, when really they are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the number one sort of purpose of books is to expand a reader's empathy. And that's why I think all of the book banning that's happening these days is very upsetting, because, like, children should be reading about people outside of themselves and people who are different from themselves. Like, that's what makes our world better, right? Is the more you understand other people, the better the world will be. And that starts with children reading as many books as they can and just being exposed to all the different kinds of ways a person can be. And so I'm writing about dragons, so it doesn't seem quite the same, but I'm hoping that the books, you know, there's a lot about how the dragons view each other. You know, they have these, they judge each other based on, like, what tribe they're from, or the expectations they have in their head. And then they grow past that as they get to know each other. And that's really important to me in the books. And there's definitely a lot, like, I try not to have exact parallels to what's happening in the real world, but questions of, like, you know, resistance to authoritarian evil, I think is something that's been on my mind. And actually, as I was writing book 14 was when the pandemic shut everything down. And I had, before everything started, I had been writing about a plague in the Icewing Kingdom. So it was really strange, because that was not intentional, but it was about sort of how they'd come out of it and, like, how they were living afterwards. And it gave me writer's block for a few months, because I was like, well, I don't know, I'm still in it. I don't know what's going to happen after it. And I had to write it anyway. But I do hope that it makes the kids think about things and talk about those things with their parents. I think that's like the one great thing about if parents do manage to read the books, that they can talk to their kids about all this stuff. Like, that's always my goal, is to read whatever my kids are reading. And it's hard to keep up, especially now that they're reading different things. But, you know, just to see what they're thinking about and let them ask those questions. And I hope that, you know, I hope the books also give them joy. Like, I think the books are supposed to be fun and really, and I try to make them funny so that the kids feel very, like they're enjoying themselves as they're reading it. But I do hope it also raises some questions that they can then talk about with the people in their lives.
And, you know, just the dark cloud over both of our heads, over so many heads of parents, teachers, anybody who is close to a kid. We are recording this. This is going to air later, but we are recording this interview on May 25th. This is the morning after a mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, killed, at this moment, we know it's at least 19 elementary school children and two of their teachers. This is not the situation we want kids to be in. But it's a reality given our situation and time and place. You are tasked with communicating with kids through your books. And I'm wondering if you have anything, what's on your mind this morning?
Yeah, it's a hard day. I've been feeling very overwhelmed by the news. You know, I have a fourth grader. And I just feel so bad for those kids and those teachers. Like, it's such a hard time to be a teacher anyway. And then to also have to worry about something like this, it's like my heart just goes out to all of them. And I guess, like, you know, the one thing I feel like I want to say today is, like, to all the parents out there who have been making teachers' lives harder, like, can we take a moment and just appreciate them, you know, like how hard their job is and how much they're trying to take care of our children, and just be kind to them and to everybody. Yeah, it is a really sad day, and I'm just heartbroken for all those families. I don't know if that's the right answer. I'm sorry.
No, whatever you feel is the right answer, right? Here at the radio station, I work with college kids in the mornings. We do have just a whole cadre of interns in the mornings. And it's so striking that the entire generation of kids who are college kids now came up in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. you don't even have to spell it out for, I mean, they grew up with it. It's so striking and so sad, and it just doesn't have to be this way, but it is, and it keeps happening, and it makes you feel so powerless. And
Carlos is exactly right. Like, it just seems like the people who do have the power, like, I wish they would do something about it. Like, I feel like there are other countries have done something about it. I wish we could too.
You're speaking of other countries. You're originally from Venezuela?
Well, I was born in Venezuela, but my mom is from New Zealand, and my dad is like a New Englander, American, back to the Mayflower kind of a person.
Okay. Okay.
My mom's from New Zealand, and I grew up in South America. We moved from, like, Venezuela to Paraguay, to Miami, to the Dominican Republic, and then to New Jersey. So a lot of different places growing up.
Yeah. Well, you're tasked with putting your thoughts into words. I am also to a different extent. And it's just, it's mornings like these that just leave me completely without words, and grappling to just even wrap my mind around something that has happened over and over, but each time it just stuns me into silence.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, I try to tell myself that that there's purpose in writing the books I write, that I hope there are kids who can turn to books like this and all the other amazing books out there as like a haven, as like a place to feel safe and supported and take their minds off everything in the world. But that feels like so little when I just feel like I wish there's more that I could do.
Well, I have another question that's not related to Wings of Fire. Spirit animals. That's something where I tried to get my kids and say, hey, look, Wings of Fire. I'm going to talk to the author. And actually, you're better known, or you might not have been the author of this particular book, but spirit animals. That's something that one of my kids is into. Tell me about that project.
Well, it was really fun. That's the one I mentioned where it was going from one author to the next. So the person who wrote the book right before mine, book four, her name is Shannon Hale, and she is just the most wonderful author. I love literally all her books. And so it was really fun to get her manuscript and then be like, it was like tag, my turn to write the next part of it. And it was based on an outline that the author of the first book sort of composed for the overall 7-book series, but it also had a lot of freedom in it for developing new characters and sort of adding my own spin on the plot line. So it was a lovely project to be involved with. I like getting to practice writing in different ways and with different sort of types of collaboration. So that was a while ago, but it was a really fun project to be involved with for sure.
And how did you get involved in the first place in working in this genre? And what does your typical workday look like?
Sure. I actually started off as an editor in children's book publishing, which was a great way to start because I knew I wanted to be an author, but I didn't know a lot about how book publishing worked. And so starting as an editorial assistant and coming up, you know, at becoming an editor, gave me a sense of like what gets published and why and like what the process is like. And the same time I was at home writing my own books and thinking about what I wanted to, like what kinds of books I wanted to write. And then I got to be involved with some of these projects like Warriors and Seekers and Spirit Animals. Well, actually, yeah, Spirit Animals was a bit later, but where it was, you know, I did a Little House on the Prairie, couple of books, sort of spinoffs of the Little House on the Prairie series that were all about matching my author voice to another author. And that helped me really figure out what my own author voice is and like how it's different from those projects. And my typical day depends on how close I am to a deadline. I'm definitely like the closer I get to a deadline, the more panicked I get and the more hours a day I spend writing. But I'm a super night owl. So I will usually sleep in the morning. My husband will get the kids to school. And then I will write for a couple of hours before they come home and then spend the afternoon and the evening with them. And then go back to writing at like 11 p.m. and write until about 3 a.m. When I'm on a deadline. When I'm not, there's a lot more TV watching involved.
Well, and I'm wondering, is your turnaround time a lot more demanding in the children's book industry than it is for adult authors?
It can be. So this series in particular started off on a 6-month schedule where like there was a new book every 6 months and they're kind of long. So that was very challenging for a while. And certainly when I had my second kid and it just became impossible to keep up with. And so we've sort of had to build in more time, like as the series has gone along. Usually I have closer to like, I'd still say I probably have about 6 months to write it and then a couple extra months to edit it. But, you know, that kind of, it keeps it in my head. I'm like always thinking about the dragon world. I'm always thinking about what's going to come next. And so I feel like maybe it's good for me in a way. But it's, you know, that's a little unusual for Wings of Fire. Like not every series has to be on a 6-month schedule.
Is there anything else that you wanted to add that we didn't already chat about?
No, I don't think so. I hope that if readers try Wings of Fire, I hope they like it and that it leads them to other books. There's so many wonderful books being published these days and it's just like kind of a great time to be working in children's books. So thank you to all the readers, I guess, maybe.
My guest today has been Tui T. Sutherland, author of the entire series of Wings of Fire, in addition to many others with the Scholastic Press. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Shannon.